Big session number 32507, reel 1.
So follow reel 1. Sam, can you tell me when you were born, please?
Second place.
When and where you were born?
I was born in Gulston, Great Yarmouth, on New Year's Day.
Can you tell me a little bit about your family?
Mum and Dad lived in Beckles for about 12 years, but where I live at the moment. I've got an older sister who's in Cambridge University studying art. I've got quite a big family really. Most of them come from Australia. So, yeah.
What was that?
My granddad got married. He had a previous wife who died and got married to an Australian. So, got quite a lot of step aunties and uncles from Australia.
What about your education?
Also, right. Did the whole up to 16, or when I was 16 I left school. Not really much to say to you, really.
Were you interested at that stage in joining
them? Yeah, well, I did cadets when I was from about 13 until 16 when I left school, pretty much joined the army.
So it was always something you were interested in?
Yeah.
Were you interested in sort of military history and that sort of thing?
No, I just like the fact of like get wet and get paid for it really.
So how did you go about
joining? I went to Norwich Careers Office. Process was quite quick really, to tell you the truth. After I'd done application I was in about 3-4 months.
When you do your application, what's the kind of next stage? Do you have to do some kind of selection testing?
You do selection down here in Pembroke, which is normally like weekend long, like test your military knowledge, a mile and a half, general fitness, like back strength, upper strength. Then after the whole weekend, final interview with like a colonel, he then says, yeah, you've got a job, or yeah, you haven't got a job. You know, you go through what how you did as well.
And how was your general fitness prior to?
That was quite good because I used to run for Suffolk when I was younger. So general fitness was quite good. I think I got about 9 minutes on 1.5 miles.
And that sort of period when you're doing that, you know, that selection testing, was that the point where you think, this is for me, this is what I want to do?
Yeah, because there were quite a lot of people. I got halfway through and like sacked it because I didn't really like getting told what to do. So,
what's the next stage after that? Is there a period between that kind of selection weekend and when you joined?
Yeah, I did my selection on the 15th of December and I had to wait about a month and then I went up to Cadbury and started my training.
And can you tell me that obviously when you started training like that, what's the first things that you know, when you join the training unit, what's the first things that they sort of teach you?
Discipline, really. When I first got off the train, went up to Catrick, got off, saw a person in uniform, say, look, I'm here to go to Catrick. Says, right, get on coach, front seat, put your bags underneath. Got off and straight into free ranks and single file into the admin office. So, pretty much from day one, like getting to discipline really.
Is there a lot of paper filling up on the first week?
No, not really. It's mainly like issue of kit. Really, it's just a big hassle because obviously you've got 40 odd blokes all getting the same stuff, so it takes about 2 days to get all your stuff.
Did you have experience with cadets at all?
Yeah, I did, because most of the stuff cadets teach you, like, basic stuff they do in the army, so yeah, I did help quite a lot.
When you first arrived at the academy, were you given who was in charge of you, and how were you organised as sort of new recruits?
You basically go into your accommodation and you get told what rooms you're going into, pretty much, and then next thing you know, you're like in your own section, so you've got a lot of bonds straight away for your own.
Now, I take it that at that stage you'd already, when you got to the careers office, you'd thought about infantry and you'd thought about the ambulance. Like you, with those of the choices that you made at that stage and you were essentially going to go into them?
Yeah, they were, because I'm a local boy anyway, so yeah. that was primarily what I wanted to do.
Now, in that early stage of training, who's the person who's in charge of you?
That was the platoon commander.
And are you giving instructions on the very basics? I'm thinking along the lines of, you know, how to make your bed, how to weigh, and that sort of thing.
Even sure as how to, like, shave properly, brush your teeth properly, like, basically, proper belly basics, like how to have a shower, how to do bed, how to lay on your locker, things like that, so.
Is that just to get you right into the kind of basic army way of doing things?
Yes, it's all about discipline once again as well. So if your locker's not set in a certain way, you get punished, because the whole room's got to be set exactly the same. So if one bloke's locker's not right, then you'll get done for.
Does that mean you have to work together as a team?
Yeah, primarily, yeah.
So, you know, with the sort of room that you're in, do you sort of divvy up the duties, or do you have a role? How do you work that amongst yourselves?
We had a rota going, like some blokes would do showers, some blokes would do corridors, other sinks, and then the rest would like tidy up the room, and obviously alternate that every week.
The kind of adjusting to that again, was that fairly easy for you to do because of the cadet experience, or is it a difficult situation when you suddenly find yourself, you know, away from home or in a room full of blokes you haven't really met before?
I found it quite easy being away from home, because I always used to go on weekends and that, and weeks away, so that was alright, but I was a bit nervous at the start, because I think, what am I doing right, what am I doing wrong?
What's the first things that kind of instruct you in as well? Is it a weapon that you get? Is that the first infantry, a potential infantry recruit?
Drill as well. They'd like do it all together in 1 week. Like say Monday you'd have less than one, rifle one. Tuesday you'd have drill, less than one, and so on and so forth. As well, so.
And do these build up?
Yeah, as the week goes on, like the lessons get more longer and difficult, same as the fitness as well.
So in that phase one, what kind of level do you have to, you know, say that you went, and what kind of level do you have to get to?
Basically, satisfy standards, really, like being able to handle it safely.
And when you're in that, is there a fitness regime that you start on as well?
Yeah, when I was in training, I was really keen on fitness. Like we're doing 3-4 fitness sessions a week, so including weekends sometimes. So yeah, quite difficult sometimes as well.
And did he build it up again from? I'm thinking of sort of the duration and the length and what you're carrying. Does that build up over a period of time?
Yeah, when we first started, we'd like to go on, say, for example, mile runs, and that'd increase to 5 miles. Then it'd be 5 miles with weight, then it'd be 8 miles with more weight. So yeah, but I think chuck in a deep end straight away was quite good.
So constantly building on your fitness and your knowledge and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Is the training, is there a phase one and a phase two? When does phase one end? What kind of level are you at when you get to the...
Phase one ends when you are a basic infantry soldier, same as anyone in the army. That ends at a 12-week point. Then you get a 2-week leave, and then you go straight into phase two.
How does that differ when you go into phase two? What's the difference between the two?
Phase two is more weapons systems like GPMG, LMG, LSW, and I think they're teaching on UGL as well, up in Catrick. Fitness gets a hell of a lot harder. Like, you do a CFT, 2 hours, which is 8 miles with 42 kilograms of weight.
And you have to do it within a set time as well?
If you don't do it within a set time, then you fail it, because that is a fitness test.
And can you be box squatted as well during that period of training?
Yeah, if they think you're not catching up, then you get back, go back for 2 weeks, but mainly they do it if you got injured. So.
Is it usually a good motivation to keep going?
Yeah, it is.
within this period, are you starting to learn sort of how to live in the field as well.
Yeah, like they didn't track me deep in, like when we did a basic, we used to do like 1 day, 2 days, and a week. Then when we did our phase two, it'd be like a week, 2 weeks, and 3 weeks.
And what type of things are they instructing you in, you know, about living outside?
Doing patrols, setting up harbours, snap ambushes, OPs, recces, sort of things that an infantry soldier does across a lot of wide range of varieties.
And do they teach you how to live outside as well, that sort of thing, you know?
Yeah, they did taught us how to like sleep in our bashes and that, but we didn't like do no survival skills. So
that's basically just, you know, what it's like to live outside.
Yeah.
Okay. Were you then started being taught kind of basic section and platoon tactics, that sort of thing?
Yeah, we started that in we did a basic section attack when we were in week one. But got more in depth when we got into phase two.
Can you describe the sort of section attack? How it's done?
Well, basically, you do preparation for battle, which basically check all your kit, came up, have the sentries out. And the second part is go on patrol, come in with an effective enemy fire, which is where you have rounds splashing on your feet or men going down. Obviously, RTR, which is like take cover and turn fire. And then you try and locate the enemy. Some obviously observation, movement, and fire. And once you have located them, suppress the enemy by getting as much fire down as you can. And then you split the section into Charlie and Delta. Either Charlie will go and attack the enemy, or Delta will, using the best proven route. Once that's done, once the position's been taken, you do what's called a reorg, which they basically all get together again after being split up. And then you do a quick head count, make sure everyone's all right, make sure your ammunition's all right, make sure equipment's still all right, that's basically it.
And within a section, do members of the section have different roles during an attack?
Yeah, like you've got the section commander in 2OC, you've got your signaler, you've got a GPMG gunner, an LMG gunner, and obviously riflemen as well.
Does that go up to sort of platoon levels? Does it go that way during your training period?
We didn't do so much platoon level, but we did do it a bit. But yeah, it's basically the same.
Are you learning any of the skills? One of the rules, do you get to throw a hand grenade while you're in the phase two period?
Yeah, you do. Yeah.
Now, can you tell me the technique for throwing a hand grenade?
Look at the grenade, hold the pin, pull the pin, look at the pin, look at the grenade, and chuck the grenade.
When you say chuck, is there a method of how you hold it in your hand, how you throw it?
You basically like throw it like you would a baseball or a stone.
And when they're instructing you, how's that instruction conducted?
It's like, it's hard to describe really, but they just stand in front of you and do it, if you know what I mean, like proper slow motion, like holding the grenade in their hand for about up to a minute. As long as that fly lever don't come up, it'll be alright.
And where are you throwing it from? Are you throwing it from a trench? Are you throwing it from a position?
Throwing it from behind like a concrete barrier. Like as soon as you throw it, you get down again. Like you've got like little metal targets to hit. So.
Is it quite tempting to see what happens?
Yeah.
When getting down with that stuff?
That is a bit, but you have like a safety instructor there holding you down, make sure you don't stick your head up.
During this period as well, you mentioned drill earlier on. Does the drill increase towards the end of your training for personnel?
Yeah, it does. Like you learn different techniques, like changing foot on the march, about turn, doing salutes on the march as well. So.
And when you're doing that, did everybody get the hang of drill? Because obviously you come from the cadets where you had done a certain amount of drill.
Yeah.
Did everybody get the hang of it?
No, there were a few people I didn't really click onto it straight away, but I think they just about managed.
When you pass out, what's the passing out period like?
Well, that is a really proud moment. Like, obviously, you've got your family in the stand, they're like cheering for you. You do like march on, get inspected by an officer, and you march past parents, like, eyes over to the right, go back, form back up in front of them. Then they have a trophy ceremony, like best kid or best crew, best fitness, best endeavour, and best shot. And once that's done, you march past your parents again and march off and go on into the barn after that.
How satisfying is it to know that you've completed that?
When I first done that, it was really satisfying. Like, loads of my city's mates wouldn't even think about doing it, so...
How does that... Do you change as well in your kind of outlook once you've done your training, as you say, towards civilian friends?
Yeah, you do, because you like, go home on weekend now and ask mates what they've been up to, and like, it's the same thing every single week for them. Let's say, yeah, I've been doing work 8 till 5 and sitting in my bed.
Do they understand, really, the kind of military life that you have?
No, I don't think like anyone can understand that unless they've done it for themselves, because it is a totally different aspect to civilian life.
Okay, so you passed out. What happens after passing out? Is it, I take it as leave, is it? First?
Yeah, you got a 2-week leave, basically just to see family and friends, and then from that you go to your battalion.
And I take it you joined the battalion here at Perth, right?
Yeah, I did.
When was that?
That was 2005.
What month?
August.
So, what happens when you turn up at a battalion that's been an established battalion and you're the new guy? What's the situation?
Well, I wouldn't say unlucky, but the battalion was out in Iraq when I turned up. So, because I was only 17, I didn't get the game. But you basically turn up and get all your like burger and equipment, which you had to hand in when you were training. And you basically get shown around camp, like who the headshots are, and who to salute to, who not to salute to, who the arms then is. And basically get shown to your room, really.
Were you allocated to a company at that stage?
Yeah, I was, but I had to wait till I got back. So.
Which company was that then?
C company.
So you've arrived. What are kind of the duties that they get you doing? Because obviously the battalion being away, are you around camp most of the time?
Yeah, I was around camp, basically doing fatigues, really, like general jobs, like they had a block refurbished, so I had to get all the lockers and that and beds out of there, make the new beds up, had to do a bit of painting as well, just shit jobs to tell you the truth.
Do you have to do guard duties as well?
Yeah, I do 24-hour guards, which is normally from when I did it as 1 o'clock in the afternoon. To 1 o'clock the following afternoon.
And do you do gate duty and that sort of stuff?
Yeah, it's like 2 hours on, 6 hours off, so it's not really too bad.
How long was it before the battalion returned?
4 months.
So you had quite a lot of time in Perth, right?
Yeah.
How were you finding that?
I don't mind it really, it's just the fact that we're just doing the same thing every single day. But whereas the companies were here, you'd like to be doing different things.
And with the time, most of it being away, how many guys are left back in camp?
It's basically people that aren't able to go on tours, a lot of people with permanent injuries, people that are too young, like myself. So there's about 30 odd blokes back in camp.
So it's quite a skeleton sort of staff that's left.
Yeah, pretty much.
And did they leave somebody behind, I'm thinking an officer or a sergeant mate, did they leave somebody behind who's administrating you guys?
Yeah, he had HQ sergeant major stayed behind and HQ OC stayed behind as well as an officer.
So what happens when your company turn up again? How do you do that? Because they've just come back off tour. Is it difficult to fit in?
Yeah, it was like turning up to the town again, to tell you the truth. So. Yeah, obviously because they've been on tour together, they're like quite close and that, and you can chuck straight in the deep end really, so.
Have you got any kind of advice about how to behave when you meet sort of this established group of guys?
Yeah, I just kept my head down really, just when I got told to do something, I've done it straight away, no questions asked, then folks tend to click onto it quite quick.
And you being quite young as well, did you get all the kind of jobs that nobody else wanted to do for a while?
Not particularly. I got like take the bins out, go and mop the toilets out. Not rubbish jobs, but yeah, pretty rubbish.
So how do you establish yourself amongst that? How long does it take to get to know people?
About a month really before I like open my mouth properly and have a full blown conversation with someone. But, yeah, once I just started talking to them. They're like a really good bunch of blokes. So.
But you'd have quite a long time with them, really, because you'd have 4 months on your own and sort of an extra month to kind of get to know them.
Yeah.
Did you, are you encouraging them to socialise together?
Yeah, you are, because if you're like a bit of a black sheep, then no one really wants to know, if you know what I mean. So, because I think the crackers, the senior bloke, shouldn't really have to make the effort. So.
So you kind of fit in the pecking order, do you, at that stage?
Yeah.
How it worked?
Yeah.
Okay, so you were there for that period of time. At this stage, are you getting aware that you might have the Afghan posting?
No, we got that about beginning of the following year.
So how do you, did you get into a kind of routine once the company had arrived back?
Yeah, I was like doing fitness every single week again, doing like basic lessons, like weapon handling tests every 6 months. Just general knowledge really as well.
We do range work here?
Did a few range works, like firing from different positions, ACIF, and a personal weapons test.
So, when you done that, how did you hear that the Afghan posting was going on?
Basically, had a big battalion like meeting in the gym, and they basically like told us what the school was and that, and if we would be going, and that when we would be going, and whereabouts. And as time got closer, we got more and more, a lot more information about it.
How did you initially heard? Was it rumours first, or was it that?
It did start off as rumours, yeah. But it's like of any battalion or any rumours cut out like anything.
And how did you feel about the prospect?
Alright about really, because I watched going before, what I've joined the army before. But at the same time, it's a bit nerve wracking because you know what Afghan's like. So.
You say you know what it was like, how had you become aware of what the situation was there? Because I know in the media it didn't really appear for quite a long time until some of the guys from Free Power were filming themselves.
Basically it's when all Free Power went out there, really, it's when you started really hearing about and thinking, oh god.
Did you do any kind of research really like that? Because I know some of the guys have looked on the internet and all sorts of stuff to find out what was going on.
No, I didn't do any research at all.
When you heard that, do you start a kind of process of preparation then for the whole battalion going?
Yeah, the like fitness gets really intense, like you're doing on Friday about 4 hours fitness sessions, like running up Heartbreak Hill, jerry cans, tires, ammunition crates, doing stretch runs, like basically so you get used to carrying the kit. We did quite a lot of range work as well, and between section attacks itself, and quite a lot of exercises.
Taking that step forward, was that a useful thing, did you think, when you actually got out there? Was it good to have that level of fitness?
Yeah, it was good to have that level of fitness, because the amount of kit you're carrying out there was actually unreal. So.
Did you receive any kind of lectures on the country, the culture, that sort of thing?
Yeah, I think it was 2 weeks down to Sandhurst in the theatre. I take you through their cultures, their religions, what to do, what not to do, roadside bombs, any personnel mines, things like that.
What were you sort of, what's the kind of emphasis on the on when you're being taught there about how to deal with the people that you're going to meet out there?
I was aiming more at the between commanders really, because they're the ones that interact with them, with the translators obviously. So, but as a private soldier, you don't really speak to them. Like, just nod your head and smile really.
But do they emphasise the idea that you've got to be all friendly when you do see them?
Yeah, they do.
Within that sort of package that you're getting, do you think it covered as much as you needed to know about the country and the situation? Was that a useful tool to help?
Yeah, it was useful, but I think some of the private soldiers didn't particularly need to know, but that's just my personal opinion.
Why was that?
This little thing. I think for a private soldier it's too much in depth, but like I say, it's just one place of opinion at the end of the day.
So was it almost too big? It was things that you wouldn't need to come across in your day to day.
Yeah, pretty much.
Obviously with that package as well, is there emphasis placed a lot of the time on Hearts and Minds? I know I've done a slightly different thing from all the tours that we were turning it up.
Yeah, it's because you try and win population over, but you're trying to get the population to see that you're on their side. So if you go around helping people, then it's all for the greater good, really. So.
And were you given instruction on what not to do with the local population?
We were. I can't remember off the top of my head what they were, but yeah, we were told not to do certain things, like giving things during Ramadan, like when they're not allowed to eat. You can't offer them food or anything like that, or water. So you weren't actually allowed to do it in front of me. So.
And is there also restrictions on how you deal with women when you're out there as well?
Yeah, but to be honest, I didn't see one woman out there, to tell you the truth.
So you've done this kind of thing. You mentioned obviously that, are they giving you briefings as well on, you mentioned IEDs and your personnel minds?
Yeah.
Is that, how in-depth are those?
Very in depth. On any personnel mines, like you get taught how to clear a minefield, what certain procedures to do, like make room for your kit, take your kit off, then obviously do like a meter square clearance at a time. So, quite boring but useful.
And with that period as well, were you getting people in who'd served out there already on previous tours?
Yeah, you were like getting like first-hand experience on what it is actually like out there, which was actually really useful at the end of the day.
What kind of depth were they going into? Were they explaining what were they explaining about what the situation was, how they'd operated that kind of thing?
That and what are the trains like out there, the heat, got useful bits of information on that. So.
Did you do an acclimatisation package out in Kenya?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Can you tell me about that?
That was hot. That was right, yeah. It's basically more live firing to get used to the heat and that. But operating at night time was virtually impossible because you couldn't see 5 foot in front of you. And altitude as well, everyone kept getting nosebleeds. There's certain people going down with heat injuries because that was hot, even hot in the shade. So.
And in comparison with that, was it actually. Were the conditions worse or better, about the same?
I'd say Kenya is slightly worse because it's more of a dry heat, which you can't really do anything about, but Afghan, it's like hot during, say 11 through to 3, then it would start to cool down again, and Kenya's just hot all day round.
And were you then, did you go directly to Afghanistan or did you come back to the UK?
Come back to the UK for about a week, just to see family and friends. We went off on Afghan.
Were your family aware of the situation? Or did you let them know or did you not?
My family was already aware because my mum keeps quite a close eye on those sort of things. So
how are they feeling about the prospects of you going to do a tour that you want to do?
I think they're apprehensive to tell the truth because I've also certainly heard about out there, but. They were right about it overall, because they knew it was something I wanted to do, but they can't really stop me anyway.
And what new kit did you been issued with to go to Afghan?
All desert equipment, like desert socks, so your feet don't sweat as much, desert boots, desert trousers, which are lighter and thinner, dust covers for your Berg and Dazex, Camelback, which holds about 3 litres of water in it.
How does that work?
It's basically like a little plastic bag inside a case with a drinking straw on it. And basically when you suck it, you get the water go through the tube.
Does it keep the water cool enough for you?
That does sometimes. Depends where they actually put it, really. I mean, if you have it on the outside of your day sack, it does heat up rather quick. But if you put it on the inside, next to your back, it keeps it nice and cool.
Have you been given lectures as well on, obviously, water consumption when you're going to be out there?
Yeah, we did. We got told about just drink as much water as you need to keep yourself hydrated. Don't, rational, so to speak, because water was quite, was very available on them.
So how had you been told to carry the water? Had you been told to arrange your kit so you could carry more water?
No, basically, like, arranged it how we wanted to, but blokes were carrying a camelback, which is about 3, a water bottle, which is about 1, and a just normal litre and a half plastic bottle of water.
But it was important, it was emphasised that you needed to take water with you.
Yeah, because you never knew really how long you're going to be on the ground for, so...